Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hey, Herman and Corin, how could we possibly have a tech podcast without dedicating at least one episode to mechanical keyboards? As you guys know that I'm on a major voice productivity kick, and I take the view that our voice is the new keyboard, and therefore the gear that I've invested in over the past couple of years for data entry, for information input, has actually been microphones and speech-to-text APIs predominantly. But a keyboard is still important because we're not yet at that very evolved state of voice control that we can do everything with our voices. So right now it's a mixture. And if you want to get a nice typing experience, what would you buy except a mechanical keyboard? The mechanical keyboard is, I think, a really interesting case, quite a unique one, in fact, about old keyboards. I remember my my mother, who I haven't talked about much on this podcast, but just in case she ever starts listening, she had a picture framing factory. That was the family business in Cork, a place called Marcus Framing. And it was kind of a nirvana for old school industrial technology, which, as you guys know, is something I really love. The kind of rugged tech that just has to last and last a long time. That's the kind of tech you need when you're making thousands and thousands of picture frames. So one of the keyboards was an IBM Model M. And after I got into mechanical keyboards and learned about how people love these things, I was like, hang on a second, that looks like exactly the keyboard that's sitting there gathering dust in the business. And lo and behold, it was. So I got my hand on one and thereafter became a mechanical keyboard buyer. I'm not calling myself a fiend, because I just have one keyboard. I'm not one of the people get really, really into this stuff and kind of customize keycaps. And I am a fan of the MX Brown is a good starting point, but I like the heavier switches because I'm a naturally heavy typist. I take out some of my my energy on the keyboard. So I like black and I like gray as well. But anyway, besides my switches, mechanical keyboards started out, we had keys and we had switches. And then at a certain point in time, the industry said, that's really expensive. We're going to replace it with the silicon sensors and put those under the keys. And that's going to be how a keystroke is registered. A lot cheaper than having to, manufacture the switches themselves and put them in. And for most people, fine, it's they don't feel as good to type on, but I think memory went out, people forgot about the old type of keyboards. But then something that doesn't often happened. The market began in part to revolt against cheap membrane keyboards that just felt mushy to write upon, and a demand for mechanical keyboards came back. The other aspect of the mechanical keyboard story that I find interesting is that it's remained the standard in certain industries because of the fact that those switches are rated for a certain number of presses, which is often in the millions. And those tend to be the ones we love talking about on this podcast, mission critical work environments where failure has to be controlled robustly. Contexts like the military, air traffic control. And the next time you're checking in at a check-in counter at the airport, or even going to a cashier, but cashiers, I've noticed, are slowly fading them out. But certainly at the airport check-in counter, that's a great place to spot mechanical keyboards in the wild, if you don't look too strange, glancing over your luggage to see what the check-in agent is typing on. But you'll notice they have those they even look sturdier from the outside. Sometimes they have that nice click sound. So Herman and Corin, I guess what I'm interested in knowing is really, what is the state of market demand for these? In 2026, they remain a perennial favorite of the tech community. I love mine. I couldn't go back to a regular keyboard. And besides the enthusiast marketplace, which I've mentioned, who else is using these? Because I suspect that the actual demand and use for these in the workforce is more than we might expect, and in more than those traditional users that I mentioned. Herman and Corin, let's talk about mechanical keyboards in the year 2026. Over to you two.
Hey everyone, welcome back to my weird prompts. I am Corn, and I am sitting here in our living room in Jerusalem with my brother, who I suspect has at least 3 different keyboards within arm's reach right now.
Herman Poppleberry, at your service. And Corn, you are being conservative. I actually have 4 if you count the macro pad I just finished soldering last night, but you are right to bring it up. Our housemate Daniel sent us a fascinating voice prompt earlier today. He has been on this massive voice productivity kick lately, using speech-to-text for almost everything, but even he admits that the physical keyboard is not going anywhere just yet.
It is an interesting tension, right? We have these incredibly advanced large language models and voice recognition systems in 2026 that are nearly flawless, yet the market for mechanical keyboards, these chunky, tactile, sometimes very loud devices, is actually stronger than ever. Daniel was asking about the state of the market, and who is actually using these things beyond the hardcore enthusiasts?
It is a great question, because it touches on the fundamental way we interact with machines. We have seen this massive resurgence. The mechanical keyboard market has grown significantly from a niche hobbyist market into a mainstream productivity sector estimated around 500 to 800 million globally. It is not just for gamers anymore. We are talking about a significant percentage of the professional workforce.
I want to dig into that workforce aspect, but first, let us address Daniel's point about voice. He says voice is the new keyboard. While he is right that the barrier to entry for voice has dropped, there is something about the tactile feedback of a mechanical switch that voice just cannot replicate, especially for deep work. Herman, you've spent way too much time reading about the psychology of typing. Why is that physical connection still so vital?
It comes down to the sensory loop. When you use voice, there is a cognitive load associated with speaking your thoughts clearly. You have to vocalize, which is a different part of the brain than the motor skills used for typing. When you type on a high-quality mechanical keyboard, you get immediate tactile and often auditory confirmation that an action has been completed. This is called the actuation point. On a cheap membrane keyboard, like the ones that come free with a desktop, you have to bottom out the key, meaning you press it all the way down until it hits the plastic frame. That is mushy. It is fatiguing.
Right. And on a mechanical switch, you feel that little bump or hear that click before the key even hits the bottom, so your fingers can move to the next letter faster and with less force.
Exactly. It is about efficiency and ergonomics. In 2026, we are seeing a huge rise in what people are calling the professional athlete approach to office work. If you are a coder, a writer, or a financial analyst, your keyboard is your primary tool. Why would you use a $5 piece of plastic that gives you repetitive strain injury when you could use a tool designed for your specific hand size and strength?
That leads perfectly into Daniel's question about the workforce. Mechanical keyboards are increasingly popular in tech and finance sectors, with growing requests for them in new office setups. That is a massive jump from even 5 years ago. It is not just the enthusiasts buying custom keycaps from group buys anymore.
It is the enterprise shift. Companies have realized that the cost of a $200 keyboard is negligible compared to the cost of a developer getting carpal tunnel or simply being 10% slower because their keyboard keeps ghosting or missing keystrokes. We are seeing major players like Logitech and Razer, and even more niche brands like Keychron and Wooting, dominating the corporate space now. They are making these sleek, professional-looking boards that fit in a boardroom but have the same high-end switches we love.
I think there is also a social element to it. For a long time, the mechanical keyboard was the enemy of the open office plan because of the noise. The classic Cherry MX Blue switches sounded like a hailstorm on a tin roof. But the technology has evolved so much. Herman, tell them about the silent switches, because I think that is what really unlocked the office market.
Oh, the silent tactile and silent linear switches are a game changer. We now have dampened switches, like the Haimu Heartbeats or the latest Silent Bobos, that are actually quieter than most cheap membrane keyboards. They use internal silicone bumpers or specialized housing geometries to kill the sound of the upstroke and the downstroke. So you get that beautiful crisp feeling under your fingers, but the person sitting 2 feet away from you hears absolutely nothing. That was the barrier. Once the noise problem was solved, the floodgates opened for corporate adoption.
And let us talk about mission-critical environments. Daniel mentioned the military and air traffic control. I find this fascinating because these are areas where failure is not an option. You cannot have a key stick when you're directing a Boeing 787 to land.
This is where the durability factor comes in. A standard membrane keyboard is usually rated for maybe 5 to 10 million keystrokes. That sounds like a lot, but for a heavy user, you can hit that in a year or two. A high-quality mechanical switch is rated for 50 million, 80 million, or even 100 million keystrokes. In a mission-critical environment, like a nuclear power plant control room or a naval vessel, you need hardware that is redundant and rugged. We are even seeing a shift toward optical switches in these fields, because they use light to trigger the signal, meaning there are no metal contacts to corrode or fail in humid or salty environments.
I actually looked into the air traffic control keyboards after Daniel mentioned them. Many of them use specialized switches with a very high actuation force. The idea is that you want it to be impossible to accidentally trigger a key just by resting your hand on it. You have to be intentional. That kind of physical logic is something you just do not get with a touchscreen or a voice command.
Right, imagine trying to give a precise vector to a pilot using voice in a noisy room, or worse, having a voice assistant misinterpret a number. With a mechanical keyboard, the physical resistance of the key is a safety feature. It is a haptic confirmation. In the military, they often use what are called buckling spring keyboards or very heavy tactile switches because they often operate in high vibration environments. If you are in a tank or a plane, you need to know for a fact that you pressed that button.
So, we have the enthusiasts, we have the corporate professionals, and we have the mission-critical sectors. But what about the average person? In 2026, are we seeing these in homes more often?
Absolutely. I think the pandemic was the original catalyst, but the momentum never stopped. People spent so much time at their home desks that they started caring about the quality of their experience. Now, it is common to see mechanical keyboards in high schools and universities. Students are writing their essays on them because it makes the process less of a chore. There is a psychological aspect where a good keyboard makes you want to type. It turns a mundane task into a tactile pleasure.
I have to admit, even I fell for it. You gave me that one with the creamy, thocky sound. I think you called them Gateron Oil Kings. And suddenly, writing my emails felt like playing a musical instrument. It is hard to explain to someone who has only used a laptop keyboard, but it really does change your relationship with the work.
That thock sound you mentioned is actually a huge part of the market now. People are obsessed with the acoustics. There is this whole subsector of the industry dedicated to foams, gaskets, and lubing switches just to get the perfect sound. It sounds crazy, but it is no different than someone wanting a car that sounds a certain way when the door closes. It is a sign of quality and solid construction.
Let us pivot back to Daniel's point about voice. He is a big fan of the speech-to-text APIs. In a world where AI can transcribe our thoughts perfectly, does the keyboard eventually become a legacy device, like a fountain pen or a vinyl record?
I think it becomes more specialized, but never legacy. Voice is great for dictating a long email or a first draft of a novel. But voice is terrible for editing. It is terrible for coding. It is terrible for precise data entry. Imagine trying to navigate a complex spreadsheet with just your voice. You would be saying cell B14, move to cell C22, change formula all day. It is exhausting. The keyboard is a high bandwidth spatial interface. Your brain knows where those keys are in three-dimensional space without you having to think about it.
That is a great point. The spatial memory of the keyboard is something voice cannot touch. I can type in 90 words per minute without looking at the board, which means my eyes can stay on the content. If I am talking, I am constantly having to monitor if the AI is catching my words correctly. There is a feedback loop that requires more visual attention with voice than with a keyboard.
Exactly. And there is the privacy aspect. If you are in a crowded office or a cafe in Jerusalem, you do not want to be dictating your private business plans or a sensitive email to your doctor. The keyboard is a silent, private communication tool. In 2026, as we become more concerned about data privacy and the noise pollution of AI assistants everywhere, the quiet mechanical keyboard is actually a sanctuary.
I want to talk about the state of the market specifically. One thing I have noticed is the rise of the magnetic switch and the Hall effect keyboards. This seems to be the big tech leap recently. Can you explain why that matters for someone who is not a gamer?
This is actually the most exciting development in years. Traditional mechanical switches use a metal contact. When you press the key, two pieces of metal touch, and a signal is sent. A Hall effect switch uses magnets and sensors to measure the exact distance the key has traveled.
So it is analog, not just on or off.
Exactly. This means you can change the actuation point in software. If you are typing a long document and you want a deep, deliberate feel, you can set the actuation to 2 millimeters. If you are playing a fast-paced game or doing rapid data entry, you can set it to 0.1 millimeters. You can even have the key do different things depending on how far you press it. Press lightly for a lowercase letter, press hard for an uppercase letter. We are even seeing features like Rapid Trigger, which resets the key the instant you start lifting your finger, making it incredibly responsive.
That is incredible! So the keyboard becomes a dynamic tool that adapts to the software you are using. That feels like a very 2026 solution to the hardware-software divide.
It really is. And because there are no physical metal contacts rubbing together, these switches basically last forever. There's nothing to wear out. So the durability Daniel was asking about just went from 100 million clicks to basically infinite.
We should also mention the right to repair movement here. Mechanical keyboards are one of the few pieces of modern tech that are almost entirely user serviceable. If a switch breaks on my $300 custom board, I pull it out and put a new one in for 50 cents. If a key breaks on a laptop, I might have to replace the entire top case for $400.
That is a huge selling point for the modern workforce. Sustainability is a big deal now. People are tired of disposable tech. A good mechanical keyboard frame, especially one made of CNC machined aluminum, can easily last 20 or 30 years. You just swap the switches and the keycaps when they wear out or when you want a new look. It is an investment in a tool rather than a consumable.
It is funny we are talking about this as a high-tech future, but it is really a return to the way things were with the old IBM Model M keyboards that Daniel mentioned. Those things were built like tanks. My mother's factory probably still has some of those running.
They probably do. The Model M is the ancestor of everything we are talking about. It used a buckling spring mechanism that gave incredible feedback. The industry moved away from it because it was expensive to manufacture and people wanted thinner, cheaper laptops. But we realized we lost something in that transition. We lost the joy of the interface.
I think that is a perfect way to frame it. The joy of the interface. It is not just about the utility, it is about the experience of the work. If you are spending 8 hours a day at a desk, the difference between a mushy, frustrating experience and a crisp, satisfying one is huge for your mental health.
It really is. And we are seeing that reflected in the custom keyboard scene too. It has moved beyond just the tech. It is now a form of desk art. People are using different materials like wood, marble, and different types of resins for their keycaps. It is a way to personalize your workspace in a world that often feels very sterile and digital.
So, to answer Daniel's question about the state of market demand, it is booming. It is moving from the fringe to the center of the professional world. And it is not just for enthusiasts. It is for anyone who values their time, their health, and the quality of their daily grind.
And I suspect that as voice technology gets even better, the keyboard will only become more of a status symbol and a specialized tool. It will be the difference between someone who is just consuming content and someone who is creating it.
That is a bold take, Herman. The keyboard as the mark of the creator. I like it. Before we wrap up this section, I want to talk about some practical advice for people listening who might still be on that membrane keyboard that came with their computer and are thinking about making the switch.
The first thing I would say is, do not get overwhelmed by the options. It can be a rabbit hole. Start by identifying what you hate about your current setup. Is it too loud? Is it too mushy? Do your wrists hurt?
And there are different sizes too, right? You do not necessarily need a full-sized keyboard with a number pad if you do not do a lot of data entry.
Exactly. The 65% and 75% layouts are very popular now because they save desk space and keep your mouse closer to your body, which is better for your shoulders. If you are an accountant, get the full size. If you are a writer, a smaller board might actually be more comfortable.
What about the switches? For someone who wants that professional office feel without being the loudest person in the room.
Look for silent tactile switches. They give you that nice little bump so you know you have pressed the key, but they are whisper quiet. Brands like Keychron or even the silent versions of Cherry and Gateron switches are fantastic. And honestly, if you can, go to a store or find a friend who has one and just try it. It is like trying on a pair of shoes. You will know instantly when you find the right fit.
I remember when I first tried your keyboard with the heavy tactile switches. At first, I thought it was too much work to press the keys. But after an hour of typing, I realized my hands felt less tired because I was not bottoming out. It is counterintuitive, but a heavier switch can sometimes be more ergonomic because it teaches you to type with a lighter touch.
That is exactly it. It is about training your fine motor skills. Once you stop smashing the keys against the plastic frame, the vibration stops traveling up your fingers and into your wrists. That is how you avoid the long-term damage.
So, we have covered the workforce, the mission-critical stuff, the tech developments like Hall effect switches, and the ergonomics. It seems like the mechanical keyboard is more relevant in 2026 than it has ever been.
It really is. And I think Daniel's point about voice is a great one to keep in mind. We should use all the tools at our disposal. I use voice for my grocery lists and quick reminders. But when I am sitting down to write a deep dive on a technical topic, you can bet I am reaching for my mechanical board.
It is about the right tool for the right job. Voice for speed and convenience. Keyboard for precision and depth.
Well said, Korn.
All right. Let us take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to talk about some of the more weird developments in the keyboard world, like the split ergonomic boards and the ones that look like they belong on a spaceship.
Oh, you mean the dactyl manuform? Now we are getting into the real nerd territory. I love it.
We will be right back. And we are back. Herman, before the break, you mentioned the dactyl manuform. For those who are not looking at a picture of it, this thing looks like someone took a keyboard and melded it over two bowls. It is a split, contoured, ergonomic keyboard. Why on earth would someone choose that over a normal-looking board?
Because your hands are not flat, Korn. If you rest your hands naturally on a table, they are slightly angled, and your fingers are curved. A standard keyboard forces your wrist to turn outward and your fingers to flatten. This is called ulnar deviation and pronation. Over years of typing, that is what causes the most damage.
So these weird-looking boards are actually designed around the shape of the human hand, rather than forcing the hand to adapt to the shape of the machine.
Exactly. In 2026, we are seeing a huge rise in these boutique ergonomic firms. They are using 3D printing and custom circuit boards to create keyboards that are tailored to the individual. Some even have integrated trackballs or thumb clusters with 5 or 6 keys just for your thumbs.
That makes so much sense when you think about it. Your thumbs are your strongest fingers, yet on a normal keyboard they only do one thing, hit the spacebar.
It is a total waste of potential. On a split ergonomic board, your thumbs can handle backspace, enter, shift, and even layer switching. It is much more efficient. It takes about 2 weeks to relearn how to type, but once you do, most people say they can never go back.
It is interesting how the market is bifurcated. On one hand, you have the sleek, beautiful office boards we talked about earlier. On the other hand, you have these highly specialized, almost alien-looking tools for people who are serious about their long-term health.
And the technology is getting cheaper. You used to have to spend $500 and know how to solder to get a board like that. Now, you can buy pre-built ergonomic boards for under $200. It is becoming accessible to the average office worker, not just the guy who spends all weekend in a lab.
I think this connects back to the broader trend we see in technology today, the move toward personalization. We want our phones to look a certain way, our software to behave a certain way, and now our physical tools to fit us perfectly.
It is the end of the one-size-fits-all era, and I think that is a good thing. We are all built differently. Why should we all use the same rectangular slab of plastic?
It is a great question, and it brings us back to Daniel's prompt. He is finding his own way with voice, but even he acknowledges that the keyboard remains the essential partner in that dance.
I would love to see a hybrid system where you use a small, highly ergonomic mechanical pad for shortcuts and navigation, while using voice for the bulk of the text entry. That feels like the true future of productivity.
We're already seeing some of that with macro pads. Little separate keyboards with just 6 or 12 keys that people program for specific tasks in Photoshop or Excel.
Yes, and some of them even have little screens or rotary knobs for scrolling through timelines. It is all about offloading that repetitive work from your brain to your muscle memory.
So, looking ahead, where do you see this going in the next 5 years? We are already in 2026. By 2031, will we still be clicking away?
I think so. But I think the keys themselves might change. We might see more haptic feedback integrated into the keys, where they can change their resistance based on what you are doing. Imagine a key that feels like a heavy click when you are deleting a file, but feels soft and linear when you are typing a poem.
That sounds like science fiction, but with the Hall effect sensors we talked about, it is actually not that far off. We are already seeing prototypes of this from companies like Razer and some of the open source projects.
Not at all. The software just needs to catch up to the hardware.
Well, this has been a fascinating deep dive. I think I have a much better understanding of why my desk is currently covered in your keyboard projects.
Hey, I'm just trying to save your wrist, brother.
I appreciate it. And I think our listeners will too. If you are sitting there at a desk right now, take a look at what you are typing on. Is it a tool that brings you joy, or is it just a piece of plastic? Maybe it is time for an upgrade.
And if you do upgrade, let us know. We would love to hear what switches you chose. Are you a thought person or a click person?
Before we sign off, I want to give a quick shout out to everyone who has been listening to My Weird Prompts. We have been doing this for over 200 episodes now, and the community we have built is just incredible.
It really is. We love getting these prompts from Daniel and from all of you. It keeps us curious and it keeps us learning.
If you are enjoying the show, we would really appreciate it if you could leave us a quick review on your podcast app or on Spotify. It genuinely helps other people find the show and lets us keep doing this.
Yeah, a rating or a review makes a huge difference in the algorithms. And if you want to see our archive or get in touch, head over to myweirdprompts.com. We have all 200 plus episodes there and a contact form if you want to send us your own weird prompt.
Thanks again to Daniel for sending this one in. It was a great excuse to talk about something we use every single day, but often take for granted.
Absolutely. Until next time, I am Herman Poppleberry.
And I am Korn. This has been My Weird Prompts. Happy typing, everyone.
Or happy talking, if you are like Daniel.
Fair enough. See you next week.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.